Standing in the living room of Chateau Villette, Lieutenant Calais watched the dying fire and felt despondent. Captain Fache had arrived moments earlier and was now yelling into the phone, trying to coordinate the failed attempt to locate the missing Range Rover. Having disobeyed Fache's direct orders and lost Langdon for a second time, Calais was grateful that PTS had located a bullet hole in the living room floor, which at least corroborated Calais' claims that a shot had been fired. From the kitchen, an agent yelled to Fache,
Captain, I'm going through Mr. Teabing's speed dial numbers and I'm on the phone with Bourget Airfield. I've got some bad news.
30 seconds later, Fache was packing up and preparing to leave Chateau Villette. He had just learned that Teabing kept a private jet nearby at Bourget Airfield and that the plane had taken off about an hour ago.
Lieutenant Calais,
Fache barked, heading for the door.
I have no choice but to leave you in charge of the PTS investigation here. Try to do something right for a change.
As the Hawker leveled off, its nose aimed for England, Langdon carefully lifted the rosewood box from his lap, where he had been protecting it during takeoff. Now, as he set the box on the table, he could sense Sophie and Teabing leaning forward with anticipation. Unlatching the lid and opening the box, Langdon turned his attention to the tiny hole on the underside of the box lid. Using the tip of a pen, he carefully removed the inlaid rose on top and revealed the text beneath it. Focusing all his energies, Langdon studied the strange text. After several seconds, he began to feel the initial frustration resurfacing.
Lee, I just can't seem to place it.
Reaching over, Teabing edged the box away from Langdon and pulled it toward himself. Taking a deep breath, he feasted his eyes upon the engraving. He said nothing for a very long time.
I'm astonished, he said. This language looks like nothing I've ever seen.
Might I see it? Sophie asked.
Teabing pushed it over to her.
Ah,
Sophie said, seconds after examining the box.
I should have guessed.
Teabing and Langdon turned in unison, staring at Sophie.
Guessed what? Teabing demanded.
Sophie shrugged.
Guessed that this would be the language my grandfather would have used.
You're saying you can read this text?
Teabing exclaimed.
Quite easily, Sophie chimed.
She lifted the rosewood box up to a canister light on the wall and began examining the underside of the lid. As Sophie moved the lid closer to the light, the bright beam sifted through the thin layer of wood, and the script appeared in reverse on the underside of the lid. Instantly legible. 15,000 feet in the air, Robert Langdon felt the physical world fade away as all of his thoughts converged on Saunière's mirror image poem, which was illuminated through the lid of the box. Sophie quickly found some paper and copied it down longhand. When she was done, she read the verse aloud.
An ancient word of wisdom frees this scroll and helps us keep her scattered family whole. A headstone praised by Templars is the key, and Atbash will reveal the truth to thee.
This poem, Teabing gushed, references not only the Grail but the Knights Templar and the scattered family of Mary Magdalene. What more could we ask for?
The password, Sophie said. It sounds like we need some kind of ancient word of wisdom.
A word of 5 letters, Langdon thought.
The last line, Sophie added, says that Atbash will reveal the truth. I've heard that word, Atbash.
I'm not surprised, Langdon replied. You probably heard it in Cryptology 101. The Atbash cipher is one of the oldest codes known to man.
Of course, Sophie thought. The famous Hebrew encoding system.
The Atbash cipher had indeed been part of Sophie's early cryptology training. The cipher dated back to 500 BC and was now often used as a classroom example of a simple rotational substitution scheme. In the Atbash cipher, the first letter was substituted by the last letter, the second letter by the next to last, and so on. The only problem, Langdon said, is that we don't have anything on which to apply the cipher. Teabing sighed.
There must be a code word on the headstone. We must find this headstone praised by Templars.
3 minutes later, Teabing heaved a frustrated sigh and shook his head.
My friends, I'm stymied. Let me ponder this while I get us some nibblies and check on Remy and our guest.
He stood up and headed for the back of the plane. Bourget Airfield's night shift air traffic controller had been dozing before a blank radar screen when the captain of the judicial police practically broke down his door.
Teabing's jet, Bezu Fache blared. Where did it go?
Biggin Hill Executive Airport in Kent, outside of London.
Fash turned to one of his men.
Get a transport up here. I'm going to London.
You're quiet, Langdon said, gazing across the hawker's cabin at Sophie.
Just tired, she replied. And a poem. I don't know.
Langdon was feeling the same way. Teabing was still in the back of the plane, and Langdon decided to take advantage of the moment alone with Sophie to tell her something that had been on his mind. I think I know part of the reason why your grandfather conspired to put us together. Langdon paused, uncertain how to proceed. The rift between you. The reason you haven't spoken to him in 10 years. I think maybe he was hoping I could somehow make that right by explaining what drove you apart.
I haven't told you what drove us apart.
Langdon eyed her carefully. You witnessed a sex rite, didn't you? Sophie recoiled.
How do you know that?
Sophie, you told me you witnessed something that convinced you your grandfather was in a secret society, and whatever you saw upset you enough that you haven't spoken to him since. I know a fair amount about secret societies. It doesn't take the brains of Da Vinci to guess what you saw. Sophie stared.
Robert, I don't know what I saw.
Were both men and women present? After a beat, she nodded. Dressed in white and black? She wiped her eyes and then nodded again.
The women were in white gossamer gowns. They held golden orbs. The men wore black tunics.
Langdon could not believe what he was hearing. Sophie Neveux had unwittingly witnessed a 2,000-year-old sacred ceremony. Masks? He asked. Androgynous masks?
Yes, everyone. Identical masks, white on the women, black on the men.
Langdon had read descriptions of this ceremony and understood its mystic roots. It's called Hieros Gamos, he said softly. It dates back more than 2,000 years. Egyptian priests and priestesses performed it regularly to celebrate the reproductive power of the female. He paused, leaning toward her. And if you witnessed Hieros Gamos without being properly prepared to understand its meaning, I imagine it would be pretty shocking. Sophie said nothing. Hieros Gamos is Greek, he continued. It means sacred marriage.
The ritual I saw was no marriage.
Marriage as in union, Sophie.
You mean as in sex?
No.
No,
she said, her olive eyes testing him. Sophie, Langdon said quietly, it's important to remember that the ancients' view of sex was entirely opposite from ours today. Sex begot new life, the ultimate miracle, and miracles could be performed only by a god. The ability of the woman to produce life from her womb made her sacred, a god. What you saw was not about sex, it was about spirituality. Whatever you saw your grandfather doing that night, you must remember it was in no way perverse. Quite to the contrary, you might call it holy.